Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were joined by Rob Lewis, one of the few Englishmen out looking forward to the cricket in Sri Lanka. But he's not altogether sure he's going to be able to watch it, Andy.
No, he isn't. And Danny Kelly came on and talked about his great series, My Sporting Life, which is still available, all episodes, and some of the insights into how he put the series together. It was really interesting.
Yeah, very good. We spoke to the tallest outfield player in the country, Carl Hudlin of Solihull Moors. Steve Harley joined us as well, of Cockney Rebel fame. Loves his football and his racing, and he was on good form, wasn't he?
Yeah, we had a bit of a chat at the top of the show. And yeah. That's about it, really.
So here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm sure you chatted about this yesterday, but the fireworks that stopped play at the West Ham Stockport. I've never seen anything like that before. It was a real you are the ref. I was thinking we should get Paul Trevelyan and Keith Hackett on to find out if they've ever done that one. It was amazing, wasn't it? I've never seen that at all.
No, I think it must have been a first, I would have thought.
It was incredible. And I'm glad we're speaking to Kyle Hudlin. He's 6'9". He's Britain's tallest
footballer. We should talk to him today because officially the protocol say there should be no Hudlin. So, if there's no Hudlin, should we have Carl Hudlin on? He played for Solihull Moors, so I'm a little bit nervous about it.
That's very true, actually. He's a big mate of Peter Crouch, actually, or Titch, as he calls him.
Yeah, he certainly does all right, Titch. Who's called? I mean, that's one of those things that no one uses anymore. That was really of its time. Someone who was short. Titch? I bet you got called Titch quite a lot, didn't you?
Of course I did. I still do.
It's just
Oi,
a phrase.
Titch, how you doing?
It's such a phrase that no one uses anymore. It's great. Thanks for hashtag bring back Titch, says Andy Jacobs. Probably not, actually.
No, probably not, actually. And
it's heightist, isn't it? It's heightist.
Well, it is. It is a bit, really. So Mo Farah is apparently addicted to coffee and caffeine. Mm. I don't know if you talked about this as well. And but the amount that he has is quite worrying, because I don't know about you, but coffee has sort of a certain effect on me if I drink too much of it.
Is it really? You don't get too graphic this time of day, eh?
I won't. He drinks as many as 6 cups every day. So I've got my own machine. I've got an espresso thing. Then I take caffeine tablets. So I was thinking, blimey, he's definitely in danger of doing a Paula if he goes on a long run.
Well, yeah. I suppose. Also, I mean, whenever people say, oh, don't drink coffee, it's bad for you, you think, well, Mo Farah's 6 cups and he can run 10K in about 25 minutes, mate. It doesn't sound like it's that bad for you.
No.
Maybe that's why he runs so fast, because he has to get back to the toilet. Maybe that's what literally keeps him running so fast, that he needs to stop en route, yeah.
It probably is that. And I thought I'd try out Harry and Meghan's podcast on the weekend.
You really? And, knowing what you're like, Andy, I don't think you're really the target audience, are you? Someone who's...
It was so
You're a massive fan. Yeah.
Totally worthy, of course. Now I read that they're doing comedy shows. They want to produce a raft of comedy shows.
Maybe we should pitch a couple of shows to them, Andy.
You got Mrs.
one?
Windsor's Boys.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah.
Educating Archie. There you go, that works.
Oh, okay, that's one for the teenagers, yeah.
And Only Flakes and Whingers. Okay. That could work quite well.
God damn, mate.
Honestly.
Yeah, then we're going to get any of those away, aren't we, with Windsor Productions, think so.
And Frank Lampard is the most trolled boss on Twitter. Did
is
you
he?
Know that?
Hmm. Why is that? I'm surprised.
I know what Yeah, and I'm surprised, but it's mostly American fans who don't think he's using Pulisic in the right way or enough. Or honestly, they're so vocal about it. You know, it's incredible, really. But, yeah, I'm a bit worried about Chelsea, really. There's a lot big gap now between us and them. It's amazing how your season can go in the
loo after him. Gaps can be made up with a little run of wins at the moment.
Yeah,
it's
but
all
you know,
very
it's hard
tight.
When you've got a lot of teams ahead of you. I've noticed this in the past. Even if you win a few games, it's very hard to make ground.
Yeah.
Other teams have to lose for you to go up the table. It's not easy. So
no, that's true. We'll top and bottom. I remember I've mentioned this before, but I remember once City were in the old days when City had no money. They were kind of at the bottom of the table and they put a run of games together, and you thought, oh, they're out of this. Then they lost one. They were right back in it again. You know, I think Sheffield United, who have got Spurs, City, and United coming up, it's going to be hard to build on that last night. We're going to have a look at last night very shortly. Yeah. Somebody was in the stadium, and it kind of came out worse for Newcastle really more than it did Sheffield United.
Because I'm spending quite a lot of time with Sue in the evenings watching TV and stuff, I'm tending to record the football, and then watch sort of my own edited highlights of the first half and then watch the second half, and that's about right. And so I did watch a bit of Wolves Everton, which I quite enjoyed. I thought
it was a good game, wasn't it? Very open.
It was, yeah. And Kai Hoover of Wolves, I thought it would have been great if he'd been scouted originally by Terry Dyson, the old Spurs player.
Fantastic. What with that and educating Archie? You need to be an Archie granddad. Yes.
Terry Dyson.
Well, Terry played in about 1962, Andy. I mean, I love Terry. He's a wonderful
player,
but, he's... You're doing your Terry Dyson. Anyway, last night, referee John Busby in the Papa John's game against Bristol Rovers and it was Wimbledon, hasn't it? I think it was Wimbledon, yeah. They had a kit clash. And so he had to put
on... Oh, I saw this, yeah.
Yeah, he had to put on a light green... he had to take off his light green shirt because of the kit clash and put on a sort of purple overshirt. So to get him through the game because it was bothering the players. But you rarely see that. You rarely see the kit clash. But sometimes, I mean, because you deal with it. Even if you're playing Sunday morning, Saturday afternoons, you know what the other team wear. But now and again, you have to come up with a kind of an impromptu kit. You have to sort of come up with whether it's just for the keeper, whether it's for the outfield players. But have you ever found yourself turning up for a game in the lower reaches, Talk Sport listeners, and having to really improvise late on to make sure the game went ahead without a kit clash? Tell us what you did. Maybe you did go shirts and skins.
I was going to ask you about that. Whether people still do that. We used to be quite popular.
You'd see some fearsome sights on Hackney Marshes if you went skins, wouldn't you? So, and all shapes and sizes. So anyway, let us know if you found yourself having to come up with an impromptu change of kit, in what circumstances, and what did you come up with? Talksport.com, and that could be just as an individual player, as a keeper, say, or even if you were the ref like John Busby, or indeed having to sort out the whole team. Talksport.com/H&J. You can text at 81089 and you can tweet to TSHNJ. That's TSHANDJ this afternoon. Andy, I'll tell you what, I'll come back to this little story later on. Do you have anything else for us while we're having a chat?
Yes, I'm quite interested in the self-interest from the bottom clubs calling for the season to close down. People like Sam Allardyce, Chris Wilder before last night. It's fantastic, isn't it? Oh, yeah, I think football definitely needs to go on hold. Yeah, well, you would say that if you're like bottom of the table. You've only got 1 point or whatever it is. So it is interesting. I do feel that they should try and carry on at all costs. I've heard a lot of stuff in the last few days and people saying, well, they should. But I don't see what that would achieve, really. And people are so harsh on football. I mean, all right, the players last night, the Sheffield United players, they probably shouldn't have celebrated. But you've got to have a heart. They've had a terrible season. They got 2 points before last night. You know, it is difficult. You know, it's an emotional game.
Yeah.
And they're all in the same bubble. They've all been tested pre-match. I don't think people are making
the only
too
thing
much
is from a distance, the people that aren't massive football fans are all having to make sacrifices. They can't hug their old mum, or they can't do this.
Well, we all,
everybody has
right.
to check themselves in one aspect of their life, whatever it is, whether it's forgetting to put a mask on for 5 minutes and then feeling very guilty about it when you're out and about. Everybody's having to check themselves. So maybe, footballers are duty bound to do that as well.
I don't know. I mean, one bloke wrote to the Sun, he said, for 90 minutes, we have 22 footballers spitting, swearing, kissing and cuddling. What rubbish. No wonder the public's sick to death of all this. And you think, well, that's not really accurate, is it? That's not really what happens in 90 minutes. You know, you get the odd goal celebration.
Yeah.
There's been some surveys, haven't there? There's been some work done. The actual contact within the 90 minutes of players is not that great.
No.
It isn't, you know.
Well, it isn't, but I mean, if you'll get into a group huddle after you've scored, it becomes
greater. It's not ideal, but yeah. I don't think that's causing the rise in COVID myself, but there you go.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We're asking about the ways you got over a kit clash, and Jimmy Bob has been in touch. He said, I remember a few years back we had a kit clash and one of the other team's players said he'd sorted it out. He went to his van, he was a builder, and came back with a can of yellow line marker and black bags. He then proceeded to spray 11 black bags with yellow stripes. Job done. Couldn't you just warn the black
Job
bags,
done.
Jimmy? I mean, you're sweating. You know, you're sweating like mad because you're inside a plastic bag, effectively, and you've got the fumes of the spray on you. Just playing the black bags. I mean,
did they win? That's the question.
He doesn't say. I'm guessing not. So you can keep those coming. Impromptu kit clashes and changes you had to make at the 11th hour. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. Steve Harmison will join us a little bit later on. We'll have a detailed look at what England are up against in Sri Lanka and what we can expect from the first test in the early hours of tomorrow. But we've been checking in now and again with Rob Lewis. Rob's been out there in Sri Lanka since, I think, about April when England were due to be there. Because
ridiculous.
Then the world went crazy. It was March, actually, and then the world went crazy, which meant he thought, I'll stay. I'll stay till they come back.
Well, yeah,
on the basis
true.
That he'd be able to go to the match when England next turned up. But it doesn't look like that's going to work out. But he is still in Sri Lanka and joins us now. Rob, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're good, thank you. This is a bit of a blow, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm sure you'd hoped you'd have some crowds in, but the test's going to be behind closed doors, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Like, I've known for a while that it's going to be behind closed doors, but I just thought I'd be able to get in using my story. But like, it's like really strict. There's not even any media allowed in apart from the cameraman. There's no photographers or anything. It's going to take a monumental effort to get in. But the fallback is to watch from the fort, which is the sort of castle bit that overlooks the ground.
Hmm.
But then there's rumours that they might close that because they don't want gatherings up there. So, these are just rumours, and it's just a bit of an anxious way, basically. So I don't know what's going to happen until tomorrow.
Have you been in contact with anybody in the England party? I mean, is there any chance they could sort of adopt you as a kind of, I don't know, mascot?
But you think about it, Andy, the regulations are there for a reason. You come in, so I know you were telling us last time, well, you got to know Mickey Arthur a bit, the Sri Lankan coach. But again, it's a difficult, you can't be bending the rules at a time like this, you know, they're there for a reason.
Well, I give Mickey a nudge the other day, but I mean, he wants to help, he really does, but the sort of like the ground logistics is nothing really to do with him, so he's not sure how. But I mean, I was scoping out the ground today. I kind of was chatting with a few members in the sort of like the members pavilion. One of them said maybe you can get in for like 5,000 rupees, if that's about 20 quid or whatever. But like, it's, everything's just a maybe. There's no definite answer. So I'm just going to have to find out tomorrow. I've made these massive banners as well to hang from the fort. So I've gone to this effort to make all these banners, and like if I might go up like in the middle of the night, like ninja style, and just like hang them like when no one's there, ready for the morning.
Wow.
Well, that would be good. I gather you've been able to work remotely, which helps, and you've been posing as a DJ, Randy Caddick, which is. We know that's named after, obviously. I mean, so you've been out there all this time. And how have you got on with that? I mean, haven't you been bored? Have you not wanted to come home at all?
No, not really. Other than the initial lockdown last year, like sort of April, May time, after about 2 months, life went back to normal. Like we've been sort of going out, restaurants, events, parties, which has been a stark contrast to what has been back home. So I'm feeling pretty blessed about that. The DJing thing has been amazing. It's something I've always wanted to do. So it's just a good time to learn this year, I guess, of all this extra spare time. It's been great fun, though. Like, got DJing at a bar, and when they needed a name, I just needed to come up with a cricket-themed name, because it's the reason why I'm here. And Randy Caddick was the funniest one out of the hat, so here we are.
It's going to be, I mean, it will be. I just hope it doesn't come with that and you can find a way of watching even up from up at the fort. But if you have to watch it on telly, it's going to be a fairly bizarre experience, isn't it?
I'm not even contemplating that. I've been looking around, like, I'm going to get a stepladder and just poke my head over the fence if I have to. There's no way I'm not watching it live. I've come all this way and waited all this time. So I'm staying positive. Just got to keep believing.
And will you move, when they move away from Gore, when they move to the next test match, will you move with them? I suppose you will.
The next test is in Gore.
They have to be here.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't realise that. I thought one in Colombo. Okay. Fair enough. Well, you should enjoy it. The weather's not predicted to be too good. What's it like at the moment?
No, it hammered down this morning. The whole outfield was covered. But by lunchtime, there was no more rain. But it's been cloudy and the forecast isn't good. That's another thing, another factor playing in the plans. So, yeah, I don't know. The only way I'll be able to tell you what's going to happen is tomorrow when it actually does happen.
We're going to have a chat with Harmy a bit later on. And one of the things about playing in Sri Lanka is the heat and humidity. So is it very humid at the moment, or is the rain been sort of breaking that a bit, Rob?
Yeah, it's so humid. Mm. And I'm a bit of a sweaty man, so when it's humid, I know about it.
Well, tell us a bit about this dog you're supposed to have adopted, a stray dog called Pup. Is that true?
Yeah. So when I was in the lockdown, I was at Hirakatua Beach, which is normally like packed full of tourists, but it was totally deserted and empty. I was staying at a hostel, there was only two of us. It was closed at the time. Little Pup had a bit of a tough time. He was getting bullied by the other beach dogs. A local man threw him over a wall. A couple of other tourists were helping him out, but he kind of latched onto me and couldn't really say no to him. So he kind of stayed with me in my room for like the 2 months I was there. And then he's been rehomed, fortunately. He's gone to a nice Sri Lankan family with kids and other dogs. So he's doing really well for himself. Yeah, I'm pretty happy about that.
Oh, that's good stuff. So finally, Rob, when England have gone home, you do have no legitimate reason for being there, apart from probably having got to like the country. So how long can you stay there? And do you plan to stay there? Or do you think once basically the vaccinations have kicked in over here, you'll be on your way home?
It's hard to make plans, isn't it? I was due to come home after the cricket. I really don't fancy coming home to Tier 5. Talking to friends back home, it's not been nice. So yeah. I'm feeling very blessed. My visa's until March. I'm just going to have to see how it pans out. Because, I don't know. I've got it fairly cushy here. So it doesn't make sense to leave.
Right. It's going to be in fact when you the clog you'll get when you walk into the pub 18 months on with all your mates after all the vaccinations and we're through all this, you know, say, all right, boys, what's been happening? I mean, it's you're not going to be a popular man.
There's going to be a lot of catching up to do, I guess. Yeah.
You can't move on to India, can you? Because it's pretty restricted as well, I'd imagine.
I've got one eye on it. But,
okay, fair enough.
One test series at a time.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, you are a very resourceful man, as you proved when you went to the World Cup on crutches, but that's another story, and some of which the TalkSport listeners know a bit about. But good to talk to you, Rob. All the best. And look, we hope you get some sort of view of the stadium. But be careful. You don't end up inside, do you? I mean, don't fall foul of the authorities. But
I'm more worried about falling off a fort.
Okay. Well, we hope you don't do that either. No, thanks very much. Take care.
Martin, guys. Cheers. See you later. Bye.
Rob Lewis there, aka DJ Randy Caddick, hoping to somehow watch the cricket that he's been there since March, hoping to catch. So, as we said, Steve Harmison joins us to look at it from a cricket point of view. So, there we are. It is horribly humid, which makes it really difficult. You know, you're going to spend a long time out in the middle in that, or a long time out in the field.
No, it's a difficult place to tour.
Yeah, but England, last time they went there, 3-0, played brilliantly. Yeah. So we'll get Steve's thoughts on that a little bit later on.
Rusty as well, though. Haven't played a lot.
No, they haven't played a lot of test cricket, have they? Yeah.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. Now, I think it's fair to say that my sporting life is one of the jewels in Talk Sport's crown. Rarely do you get the chance to spend time with sports people, have a proper long-form deep dive into their careers. And Danny Kelly was fortunate enough to do that over a number of episodes, 200 plus, apparently. Now, my sporting life episodes are going to be available on the Talk Sport app. We'll tell you how a little bit later on. But we thought we'd look at some of Danny's favourites. And he joins us now. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before in the past, and I know you did regard it as a kind of a great honour and life experience to have so much time with such sort of eminent sports people.
Look, when we started, Paul, it was just an idea that had come up on the radio station. Myself and producer John Chambers started to make the programmes. Initially, they were kind of, we were semi-lighthearted. We were trying to introduce little bits of games and things into it. And it soon became clear that what was really working was the fact that these people were prepared to sit down with me for hours to do the interviews. I mean, often it took half a day to do before they were edited down to the two-hour programs that they became. I realised, and again, we have spoken about this, you and I, it's just that there's nowhere else on radio of any kind where people are required to just sit there and talk about their lives. Now, whatever skills I developed talking to people, I deployed them. I also, for the sort of listeners know, 90% of them were done in the small studio in the old Talk Sport building and done in virtual darkness. And they were like little wombs. And people, I think, responded to this. They wanted to tell their story, given that they knew to get the time to actually stretch it out. Each experience was incredibly different. Sometimes the people were extraordinarily keen to tell everything. Other times I had to sort of prize it out of them. So, I mean, we'll talk about this because I know we're going to do this for a few weeks now. There were times when people's life partner had to come into the studio to advise them the way they were going. There were other times I had to throw, in one particular case, a mentor out of the room in order to get it right. I mean, the number of them that ended in tears, either mine or theirs, were extraordinary. And also some of them are a great laugh as well, because some people are just fantastic storytellers. I think as a body of work, and you know me, Paul, I'm nothing if not immodest. I think it is literally a national treasure that archive. We don't think it's finished yet, but we're having a rest because they were incredibly brain and time consuming to make.
Sure.
And the format encouraged people to open up, Danny, didn't it? And also being face to face with them, which is much harder to do now. There's something about being in you mentioned a small room, but there is something about being face to face with somebody that is different, isn't it, to a Zoom conversation?
Absolutely. And of course, in 99% of the cases, they had agreed to do it. In one infamous case, I think they didn't realise what they'd agreed to do. I can say who it was. The great Olympian Michael Johnson, I mean, one of my absolute heroes, the sprinter. When he got to the studio, I think he all thought he was going to do the usual 10 minutes, tell us about your new shoes, Michael. and when it was explained to him that he could be there for several hours, and I presented him with the sort of 30 pages of research we'd done for the interview, he started off, unusually for Michael Johnson, he started off very slowly, but eventually he got into it. Yeah, and it is that face-to-face, person-to-person, experience-to-experience that I think made them such a unique bunch of interviews.
It also, in some cases, sadly, is a kind of record of their life when they're no longer with us. And we heard the Tommy Dock one the other day when Dock passed away. And it's the third anniversary, it's hard to believe, of Cyril Regis's passing tomorrow. And that was a memorable one, your chat with Cyril, wasn't it?
Yeah, because that was one of the ones where I didn't go in with many preconceptions. I didn't know Cyril, I'd never met him. He'd never been, I did not realise what he was going to mean to people. It was only when he passed away, as you say, 3 years ago, we played out my sporting life, and people started talking to me about it on Twitter and stuff like that, that I realised just how much he meant to people. And I went backwards into time and found an old cover of the New Musical Express, one of the few ones where they did footballers. And of course, the football they'd chosen to represent the story of football in the late 70s, early 80s, was Cyril Regis. One other thing about that, Andy, and you're right to say that sadly, a number of the people who have been the subject of this, and hopefully this won't accelerate, are no longer with us. But after that programme went out, I was moved that Cyril Regis' family got in touch with the station and asked if they could have a copy of it. Such was it. The joy of listening, and sometimes it's quite difficult listening that one, I remember, to Cyril talking.
Yeah, we'll play you a clip that kind of sums up what you just said. It was Cyril's memories of the abuse he received after being called up for England.
Well, I remember getting a letter through the post. This is sort of like 5 years after being a professional footballer. That's what it took you, you know, from 77 to 81, 82.
Well, you've gone from electrician to international footballer in 5 years as well. You could look at it that way.
Yeah, I could do, yeah. But there were so many good players in front, and I was scoring 15 to 20 goals a year there. And there were so many good players in front that you had to wait your turn. And it wasn't until, I think Bobby Robson gave him my debut, and it was announced in the papers and all that. A couple of days later, I received the letter through the post. And I opened the letter, and it basically said, if you put your feet on that Wembley turf, you get one of these for your knees. And it was a bullet came through the post. Yeah.
Why had they sent you that?
Well, you know, you're black and you're representing your country, and they don't want you to. I stuck it up. We had a laugh about it and got on with life.
I mean, I'm sorry, you say you got on with life. Even at this distance, I must say, I find it incredible that things like that were happening and that you managed to continue to be a professional footballer. Because, of course, it's designed to intimidate you. And exactly. The last thing you must do is be intimidated.
100%.
Because these people are not going to confront you face-to-face, are they?
Well, you realise that the chanting and all the issues was confined to the arena. I mean, if you was walking down London or Birmingham, or your wife, your kids was getting intimidated at school, in your home, the bricks through your car, that would be a totally different thing. But it's confined to the arena, and we had something to fight it with, and that was our talent. And we had a very good side. We can get out there, we can play football, and we played it very well.
Yeah, powerful stuff, Danny.
First of all, I apologise for all the coughing and spluttering. That was the winter I got pneumonia, and I didn't realise I had it. And look, this is two things happen in some of these interviews. There were times when people were just desperate to bring up the thing that was dark in their life, that was difficult in their life. And other times, I would probe at it. I never insisted they talked about these things. And Cyril there was responding to a question that I'd asked him about the difficulties when he first got in England squad. I mean, I knew the answer he was going to come up with. The stuff about the bullet, though, was I knew about it, but I hadn't intended to bring it up with him because it's so, you know, you might decide not to want to tell people that. But it is interesting, isn't it, that we talk about race in football and the progress we hope we're making, we try and make, and taking the knee and all the rest of it. People were being sent bullets through the post. The thing about Cyril Regis that was so remarkable about that, there was not one iota, and I would forgive him for being bitter about all that stuff. He was had not allowed it to affect his personal life. It may have affected his view of the world and all the rest of it, but he was a happy and contented, because nearly all the programmes I asked them after several hours of talking to people, and are you happy now, which is the question because the only rule we had was that the person must have finished their active sports career. They could be administrators or managers or all the rest of it, but the actual playing must be over. And Cyril was a very, very happy man. And I could see why, because he had a gentleness to his soul, and he was an erudite, you know, he was a good talker too. He seemed very happy to me.
We'll finish with one more clip. A happier time in Cyril's life. Painful time for us, Danny. It was when Cov...
I was there, yes. I suppose you were too.
Cov won the 1987 FA Cup, and Cyril said it was a dream come true.
You know, in football, the sweetest sound is the last whistle, because you never know what can happen in football, and you're just waiting for that last whistle. We're all tired. The old Wembley was quite spongy, so with my stamina, I was absolutely wrecked after extra time. And that final whistle was like, wow. I looked up and it was 3-2. It was, as we were talking earlier, your dream was to, you know, we used to play football. There's a kids called Wembley, knockout competition. We always wanted to play at Wembley. Always, you know, dreamt of being in the FA Cup final. And to actually do it and win was just absolutely amazing. I think one doesn't realise what football means to community until you win something big. the feel-good factor in the city, people who supported Coventry, lived in the area. I mean, we're still riding on it now. Still
did,
riding the
did
fact
Did you have
that
an open-top bus parade for the
we
city?
We did. 200,000 people in Coventry. They're so proud of the city. The first thing they've won in 104 years of history is just amazing how, you know, you can give so much joy to so many people.
Here we are, Cyril Ridge. Stanley, we're out of time, sadly. We're going to do this again, as you said, over the next few weeks and talk about some of the other sporting lives. Good to talk to you. We'll catch up with you soon.
Best luck, boys. Cheers.
There we are. Danny Kelly joins us next Wednesday to bring us another My Sporting Life. You can hear all of Danny's brilliant My Sporting Life episodes on the TalkSport app. Download it from your app store. Tap podcast at the bottom of the screen. Then scroll down to My Sporting Life. There is a fantastic archive of people to listen to there. And so we'll be covering them over the next few weeks. And two of Big Cyril's former clubs, Wolves and West Brom, go head-to-head exclusively on TalkSport this weekend from 12:30. That's on Saturday. Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. And coming up in the second hour, we will be chatting to Britain's tallest outfield player. Steve Harley joins us as well of Cockney Rebel fame. We look forward to that. Talk a bit of football, racing and more. We'll have Paddy's Challenge, our little weekly battle. Alistair McGowan will be up again asking the questions along with our own Ben Fletcher. And, we'll look back on the game between Sheffield United and Newcastle last night. We learnt about both sides. Later on, we'll look at Brighton City and Spurs Fulham. I just had a look at Paddy's odds, Andy. If you fancy Brighton, or City Brighton, isn't it? Makes it even worse. If you fancy Brighton and Spurs this evening, guess what odds you'll get on the double?
What do you reckon? On Brighton, have got to be huge odds.
I mean, together, that's for both. Together. That's both Fulham and Brighton 50 to win.
50 to 1.
You get 101 to 1.
Wow!
If you want that as a double, if you want wins for Brighton and for Fulham, but stranger things have happened.
Oh no, City are in form. The way City are going,
you might give them the draw, Brighton, but I'm not sure you would give them the win.
So. Fulham will be tough. They've improved in recent games. Yeah. I think they'll give you a good game.
Well, if they turn out full strength, Jose has basically thrown down the gauntlet, hasn't he, to Scott Parker, saying, well, you know, you watch him, they're going to turn out with their absolute rocking first.
Well,
first
I don't
team.
Think they will. I think he'll look at the two games coming up, Spurs and Chelsea, and he'll think, not likely to beat Spurs, but we can definitely beat Chelsea. So we'll play the... Honestly, anybody can beat Chelsea at the moment. They're so poor.
Give over. Anyway.
Yeah, they're poor.
Maybe you need a bit more height up front, which brings us on to our next guest. Britain's tallest outfield player we're going to chat to. There is a goalkeeper, Ipswich, of a similar height. That is 6'9". But joining us now, the mighty Carl Hudlin of Solihull Moors. Good afternoon, Carl.
Good afternoon.
So, yes, a very interesting piece of you in the papers today. Beautiful picture of you and your coaches, not and mentors. Not massively surprised to see you dwarf them. You dwarf them all. But yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting career from your point of view, isn't it? You were scoring goals on Sunday mornings and got noticed.
Yeah, but it's been a mad journey so far. It's all happened so quick. Yeah, I've gone from scoring Sundays to MFL, and now I've stepped up to the pro game.
Yeah.
I'm Carl. I'm quite short, and I get quite fed up with people pointing that out because I know that. You know what I mean? I've worked it out. Yeah. I'm not that tall. But do you find the same thing? You just think you get sick of people making comments about it and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, especially when I'm out in public, I'd rather like people come up to me and ask me specifically. But it mainly comes from like you know mutters under the breath.
Oh really?
Yeah, the mutters. Oh my god, it's so tall. It's those ones. I'd rather you just come up to me in person and just say, "I'm a nice guy. I'll have that conversation with you."
As a footballer, when you're that big, are there kind of drawbacks? I mean, do people look at you and just you know think you're just going to be good in the air and that's it? They're just big man up front or big man at centre half thing.
Yeah, of course. Like people have that stereotype straight away. Like. If people look at me, the first question they ask when I tell them that I play football is, "Oh, you're a centre half?" No, I'm not a centre half. Like, oh, I love the other end of the field. I love scoring goals, and it comes with its stereotypes. But I also like the underdog mentality that it brings, and like the surprise factor.
And one of the things people always say about tall blokes is, "Oh, he's got good feet for a big man." So, have you got good feet for a big man?
Yeah, that's what I've been told. That's what surprises most people. People are especially shocked by the technique and the feet that I show for such a guy of my size.
Have you watched other players that have made the grade of similar heights to you or shorter players than you? Crouchy, for example. I mean, Tammy Abraham's a big guy as well. Do you watch what they do and the way they play?
Yeah, especially now I've got older. I've kind of matured within my game and based off those sort of players. I figure like, Olivier Giroud, Tammy Abraham, Peter Crouch. Although there's not much highlights on Crouchy when you do try and find them.
Really?
They're the players I'm trying to base my game off now, as I know that's what will take me the furthest in my career. But I also like to find my own identity because that's what's got me to where I am today and like that's what will take me the furthest.
Is there a temptation for teams that you've played in to lump it forward because you're there and they can see you? Or do you like to play in teams that actually try and play a bit of football?
I like the mixture. I think that's why I'm so suited to Solihull Moors because I've got the good balance of both. They like to play, if they have to go direct, they'll go direct. But also they like to play on the floor. That's their main style of play. So I do like a team that can do both.
Are you, I mean, it's a silly question, but are you decent in the air? I mean, I you can feel free to say no, but I imagine you're pretty good. Do you get, how many goals a season generally do you get with your head or with your feet, would you say?
I say I get more with my feet just from based off the size that I've played for. There are a lot of footballing sides, so I get more chances created through ball being played on the floor like that and like obviously my long ranges, so I do get more from the floor. However, I do contribute quite a lot with my head as well.
I think we've said, oh, you're 6'9". We should have actually given you height. I mean, if you're only 5'8", people are wondering what we're on about. But which is why we're having this conversation. But which stage did you get this kind of growth spurt? I mean, were you a very tall young kid, or did you kind of get tall at a later stage?
Oh, no, I was born, like, enormous. I think I was born at, like, 58 centimetres.
Right.
I was always meant to be tall. I think it was just a blessing that was always meant to be for me.
And growing up, did you always play football? I mean, the obvious question was basketball, I suppose. I mean, your sports teachers must have wanted to steer you that way, but was it always football for you?
Yeah, it was always football. Like, since I could walk out of football, it was just, like, that's what took my heart. Obviously, I love all sports. I got into boxing at one stage. I was doing boxing for a bit. Then I was doing basketball. But football was just what I was destined to be.
Yeah. And as you said, you were playing Sundays. How did that progression... How long ago was it you were playing sort of Sunday mornings?
I was playing Sunday mornings last season.
Wow.
Wow. That's great.
Last season. So, like, I was playing in Sunday mornings and Midland Division 2 with... I was playing Midland Division 2 with Bournemouth Falcons and Sunday morning with AFC United.
Oh.
But I was doing, like, literally both. I enjoyed football that much. I wanted to keep myself occupied with both. I think I took Sunday mornings more of like a kick around with friends rather than serious, whereas Saturdays was like where I see my career developing the most. And then I took the chance to move like from Bournemouth to Solihull United and then everything exhaled from there.
I mean, you're playing good standard National League, but do you have aspirations? I know you've done a sport and fitness degree. You're doing that at the moment, so you're having a backup career-wise, but you've got aspirations to play higher up?
Yeah, of course. I feel like the sky's the limit. I have aspirations to play for my country. I feel like that'll be the proudest moment of my career when that happens. And I also have aspirations to play in the Premier League, Champions League football. These are all things that you dream of as a kid.
Yeah.
I've started ticking off some boxes now. So
you scored in the FA Cup, didn't you, Carl? So that was one that's a wonderful thing to do.
Oh, yeah, that was a blessing. That was like people ask me all the time, like, can you describe how you felt once you scored? I honestly cannot tell you how I felt. Like, the emotion that takes over your body is like overwhelming.
Yeah. And who's your team? Who do you support?
Manchester United.
Oh, okay. Well, big man up top for Manchester United. That would say, have you been watching a bit of Edinson Cavani? What have you made of what he's brought to the team? He's an interesting player, isn't he? Class act.
Yeah, he's like the out and out nine. Like his movement off the ball is a joke.
Yeah,
it's absolutely like phenomenal, and then you've got his finishing instincts is second to none. Like, he's definitely up there with some of the greatest strikers in the world.
Yeah, well, look, Carl, lovely to talk to you. All the very best. We're going to keep an eye on you. I'm sure the listeners will be as well. I know it's a difficult time. You've had games called off. You were supposed to play our producer's team, the mighty Torquay, but that's off. So a bit worrying times really in the National League with everything that's going on.
Yeah, for sure. I just hope it continues.
Yeah, that's just they can keep get the games back on and get everybody. The season concluded. A little bit nerve-wracking. Anyway, all the best, Carl. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
There we are, Carl Hudlin now. That 6'9" Solihull Moors striker, the tallest outfield player in the country, as it
good
stands.
Good lad. He sounds really good. Yeah, his feet on the ground, as they say.
Feet on the ground.
I don't mean it like that. You know what I mean? Well, even he said about his aspirations, I don't want to run before I can walk. I understand how high the jump is to the level of the Premier League, but I want to make that jump. I thought you were well qualified.
Yeah,
but,
you'll probably make it easier than we can.
I remember doing the NBA All-Star game for Channel 4 in 92 and staying in the hotel with it. And I'm used to watching the players. When they're all on court, basketball players, they're all the same size. Sure. So they all look roughly the same. When you're in the hotel lobby, they're wearing suits and you're like 5'5" Honestly, I've never seen anything like it. It was ridiculous. Every bloke was 6'9", 7 foot. Unbelievable.
Wow. Good stuff. Amazing. Lovely fella. We wish him well.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Come on, see me. Make me smile. I'll do what you want. Running wild.
There's nothing. That, of course, is Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. And I thought I'd go and check out, just out of interest, how many plays that has had on Spotify.
Really?
47,943,940. Wow. And he gets a pound for every one. If only that were the case. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon. I wish it was a pound. It's 0.004 of a penny, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of people up in arms.
Does it add
about
up, though? It must add up still.
Yeah, we're all pretty fed up about Spotify, all of us. It's iniquitous. You know, it's not right that someone can pay a tenner a month and hear every record ever made in the history of music. And the artist, you know, I'm also the writer, of course, but so I get another income, obviously. But I suppose there's something in it, in that if people are showing the interest and then you go on tour, which is where our livelihoods are these days, it's not from selling records, it's from playing concerts, ticket sales.
Yeah, of course, which you've not been able to do recently. And you had gigs lined up this for last year, didn't you?
Yeah, 57 we have put postponed. They've all been rescheduled, all except one, for 2021, starting in May. And it's fingers crossed for that. My promoters are already looking at moving the May dates onto December.
Wow. Yeah,
it's a complete nightmare. I mean, it's not for all artists, players, actors, theatre crews, you know, all the people who work in the theatres and the venues, it's the roadies and all that. It's tough for them, really tough.
Yeah, because throughout the years you've kept touring, you've kept playing live, haven't you? That's very much a part of what you do.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. It's hard for me to explain to people, you know, how much I am missing it, because it's your life's blood. It's not just the income, obviously. It's what I've done for 47 years is travel.
Yeah.
And without, you know, the trolley bag packed and an itinerary and a tour manager emailing me every 5 minutes, without that, I don't really know who I am. You know, I'm seeing my children a bit and my two little grandchildren, youngsters. But it's not the same. I'm used to hotel rooms. And
you're missing your trouser press, aren't you, Steve? That's
yeah. We don't get them often anymore. No. But yeah, you're right. It's a lifestyle that those of us who do it and love it, I mean, a lot get out. A lot of musicians and crew get out of it and get a straight life because they can't hack that world, the travel. It can be tiring for some, well, tiresome. It can be dull for some. But for me, it's a big adventure.
Yeah.
Love it. Different audience every night, different town every day. You know. It's a job, but it's a job that, you know, you look out into an audience and you think 50% of them would give their eye teeth to have this job.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. But it's great. We can hear your enthusiasm for it, which is terrific as well. What about your love of sport? Because I was reading an interview with you, and this may or may not be correct, because we've been trying to prove it, that you're a Millwall fan. Is that correct?
It's totally correct. Why?
Oh, good.
My dad was on their books just after the war, and he played for Brighton and Hove Albion. He was a really good footballer, and we're New Cross boys. You know, my whole family is from New Cross Gate. And the old den was a 10-minute walk away, as is the new one, which I've not actually been to. I've not been to the new den.
Oh, wow.
But I was at the old den from the age of 3 and a half. My dad had me sitting on the wall until I was 17 or 18. I didn't miss a home match, apart from when I was away.
Wow.
Big. It's a Millwall family, all my brothers. Wherever I'm in the world, I know what's going on, you know.
So was this the sort of Derek Posse years, the glory years of the late 60s?
Yeah, Derek Posse from Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
the Lions. Yeah, yeah. The greatest of all was Alex Stepney. We got two seasons of Stepney before he went to Chelsea and Man U.
Yeah.
And Stepney changed everything to do with goalkeeping. I'd seen a lot of matches. We had television even then, you know. You know, I'd seen a lot of games with other goalkeepers, but once Stepney started to fly through the air, I don't think anyone had seen anything like it. He was the greatest athlete, and we knew we couldn't keep him for, you know, he was destined.
Oh, absolutely. And your other great love, horse racing, Steve.
Oh,
you've been an owner in the past, haven't you?
Oh, I am to this day.
Oh, okay.
I've got 50% of two thoroughbreds at the moment, both trained in Scotland. Unfortunately, I don't see them much, but I've got a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old in training. I've been owning on and off since late 70s. It's my big passion. Again, wherever I am in the world, my wife used to get the daily paper and photocopy the racing pages and fax them to me. And any hotel in the world, they'd go down to the front lobby and I'd say, faxes for blah, blah. And it's, we've got all these sheets of paper for you. And now, of course, it's online. And I bet most two or three times a week I'm betting. But it's just the therapy, reading form and watching the racing. Yeah. I like that world
a
lot.
And there was a horse called Cockney Rebel, but you didn't own it, did you? Somebody else owned it.
Yeah, interestingly, Phil Cunningham, who owns it, the horse, did. I think he sold it on. It's a stud now, of course. It was 2007 when he was three. Yeah, fantastic. I didn't own it, but I own the copyright of the name. Mm. I own the trademark. And so they needed permission. And I said, well, what's its breeding? How good is this horse? And they introduced me to the trainer, and Jeff Huffer, and he said, no one in Newmarket knows about this horse because we're such a small stable.
Mm.
And he said, but believe me, this is the real deal. And I said, go on then, you know, because they said to me, you might want a horse one day called Cockney Rebel. And I said, well, I'll never own one probably as well-bred as this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to win two classics. I was seriously involved. Well, I'm not the owner by any, not at all, but they involved me very closely, and I live half an hour, fancy that, from Newmarket. And I was on the gallops all through the winter, 2006 into 2007. I went to the gallops once every couple of weeks to see this horse perform, and I was coming home 10 o'clock in the morning. I'd get back to my house and I'd go online, and I kept opening all these betting accounts, you know. Not the big five, but dozens. There were dozens of these small betting out there, betting companies. And I was opening all these accounts, not credit, but debit. You'd open it. I'd open one and I'd put 200 quid in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd back Cockney Rebel to win the 2,000 guineas in May.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the depths of winter. And I'd have 100 quid each way at 60 to 1.
Oh, wow.
And 45 to 1. You know, you don't have to put a lot on to win a lot at those odds. And I was this for months. Yep. And we went to, after Newmarket, we went over to the Curragh 2 weeks later, and he won the Irish 2,000 guineas. Much shorter odds, of course.
Yeah. You weren't getting 60 to 1 then.
No. Now, he won at Newmarket at 25 to 1. That was the SP.
Yeah.
Now, and, quite a lot of us had an awful lot of money on that.
It took
weeks to count it.
Now, you were hoping to tour an album you brought out at the start of last year, this year, Uncovered, with some kind of eclectic lineup of songs you like that you've covered. Are they all acoustic, Steve?
Oh, yeah, this is an acoustic band.
Mm.
There's a very light drum kit, double bass. Absolutely fantastic Martin Simpson on guitar, Barry Wickens from my band on guitar and viola, violin. It's a couple of gospel singers. It's a great sounding album. I can only say that in thanking Matt Butler, my engineer. Matt Butler did a wonderful job, and I'm very proud of it. And we played to promote it. In February and March, we played 9 shows out of 61.
Oh, wow. What a blow.
When the door got slammed. Yeah.
SteveHarley.com is the website, and people can check out all the dates. I see you've got dates for 2022 on there and everything, so they can check out what you're up to. In the meantime, we're going to play Out of Time, one of the tracks from the album, the old Stone song. So why did you choose that among them? Is that an old favourite of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to sing all these songs that I'd adored, and they're all very special pieces of work, even Out of Time. Once you get into the lyric and everything, you realise what a good narrative it is. It's not bubblegum.
Hmm.
And, yeah, they're all songs that I've been singing and playing at home for 20 or more years, and and so trying to find 9 tracks, 2 of them on the album are mine, and 9 are not mine. But to pick them actually wasn't as difficult as people think it might be.
Yeah. Well, look, it's lovely to talk to you, Steve.
Yeah.
We look forward to seeing you back on stage soon. We'll play out without a time. And thanks for joining us.
As usual, good luck to you.
Take care. Steve.
Cheers, Steve.
Steve Harley there. Let's play a bit of Out of Time, the old Stones, we know. Chris Farlow song as well.
Out of touch, my baby, my poor old-fashioned baby. I said, baby, 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 you're out of time.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Max will be alongside me. Andy, you're back. Actually, you are back tomorrow for the birthday spread. aren't you?
I am, yes. I'm looking forward to it, in a sense.
In a sense. I think we all are, in a sense. But Andy will be back Friday for the regular show. But for the birthday spread, me and Max tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.